Yeah, inspiring our students to sing. I didn't completely know how to prepare for this. Inspiring students to sing is not like teaching a math class where you get the technique, you get the formulas. Don't confuse the formula for a sphere for a circle. I thought that was so good the first day. But, formulas work, don't they? If they're not working, you're not doing something right. I don't know a formula like that for inspiring students to sing. And so I did in my... and yet it is possible. It's impossible to inspire students to sing. So I don't know if you caught this in my little introductory thing, but I asked it as a question. How do we get our students to sing with enthusiasm when neither they nor we feel like it? Bring some ideas and we'll share them with each other. So I'm tempted to ask you how many ideas you brought. I did bring some ideas to the table as well, and probably get me going with some questions and I can just ramble on indefinitely. So that's I think that's getting worse with age for me. I'm not 100% sure, but I do tend to ramble a little bit. And I do have lots of ideas, and they're a little bit interconnected. And I will just give one of them now. Sometimes when you think that you have not succeeded in what you endeavor to do when it comes to inspiration, some students get it afterwards. Like they start the journey, and maybe they started before they were in school or before they were in your class, and it's later years that they talk about how there was actually something going on behind that non-committed facade, and it's coming out now. And so we just work. We work, we hand it to the Lord, we do our best. And I love the phrase, love never fails. Love, in King James, it says charity. What's the same word as love? Agape. Agape never fails. And I struggled with that one time, and I was like, well, I do know of failures. And I don't know that we did it on purpose, like we were doing it, that was a fail because we didn't love. I think one thing that verse is saying is that if we do something truly in love, it's not a failure. There is something, God can use it in one way or another. It's not that the person that we're endeavoring to teach or work, that they will always make the right choices, the right decisions, but that act of done in love is not a failure. And so that's what we do, and we give it to God. So I hope you're thinking about these things. I have a couple keys that I wrote down that seem to me to be principal keys in inspiring students to sing. And I did have a talk with someone before this class about this class who was leaving. And he had a little bit of a different idea maybe of what we were going to talk about. And so I'm open to all of that as we have time. And his idea was like, how do you teach people to sing? Someone who has struggles or drones or something like that. We'll get to that if you would like that. I'm thinking more about attitude right now. How do you get people to want to sing, to like to sing, to enjoy singing? All right? And again, I don't know of any actual formula. Now, there are the easy, trite answers. One of them is be enthused and your students will be enthused. Well, how do you get enthused? Okay? How do we do that? And I don't want to be a little bit of a wet blanket, but I have been enthused many times and my students still didn't get enthused. Or at least that's what it seemed like. I could be wrong with that. I've typically taught adolescents, and earlier and later, of course, but there are all kinds of things happening at home, at church, inside, outside, spiritually, mentally, physically, all that stuff, and life can be a bit of a mess. And so it's easy to I guess, judge or to categorize your students or your children even, and you think they're not involved, they're not committed, or maybe they are. Maybe the ones we think that they are, they're not as much as we thought, and maybe the ones that aren't, we thought weren't actually are. All right, having given all that mystical stuff, let's start with number one, which I've been kind of leading up to, and that is, I don't know of any other... Actually, I'm going to say something else first. This comes from my dad, who only taught 3 years. But it was interesting to me growing up how many times people, his students, talked about the impact that those years had in their life. That was very interesting to me. And so my dad was always a teacher in my mind, and he was interested in the school. He was often on the board. He was interested in the children, people who weren't even connected with him. And then he taught. He was our choir conductor for many years, and so it was kind of a teaching program as well. So this is something he's told me just recently, then this kind of popped into my mind that I've been toying this over, and he always has an opinion about the school, what's going on at school. And he loves people, and he's very positive, but he does have some critiques to make sometimes, and so it's kind of interesting. But he said, I've really come to the idea that there are, and I forget if he said three or four things. And if it, I have four down, and I forget if maybe I added one, which one it is. So I'm going to give you four things. Four things that he thinks are of exceptional importance to the culture of the school and the holistic school experience and how effective it is. I'm really curious if you would guess these four things, all right? So I'm going to just say them. Now again, I think one of them was added by me, but I actually do not know which one it is. Okay, so I don't know that that's important. All right, one of them was the music program. What do they do with singing? How does the school holistically work with singing? What they do with singing, that impacts the whole school. It permeates all the other subjects and in one way or another impacts their thinking. All right, another one is what they do and how they act at recess. Okay, so that's a big thing. That's actually, as I've gotten older, it's become one of the hardest things for me to work with. Recess activities, the engagement that goes on and the relationships, the way they relate with each other, teaching people how to win with grace and how to lose, be a good sport, well, that's just enormous in life and all of that, okay? Another one is the stories that are read and how they're read. Story time. Now, I don't know. Brother Jonathan, you have more experience with this than I do, I think, and I've had some bumping in with Mennonite schools. I don't really know how non-Mennonite schools, like charter schools or whatever, but this thing of having story is something that I grew up with, and I've certainly implemented. And it's interesting, too, because my son Raphael taught school in Romania with me the year before last, and he suddenly did, story is so enjoyable. From a teacher's perspective, when you get those children listening, they're loving this, and boy, it's hard to stop. Yeah, and I said, I love story time, and I love doing it, and I love being involved with it, and also I loved it when I was younger. But the stories that are read and how they're read, he said that is enormously impactful on a school's spirit, culture, and projection into the future, all right? And then devotions, how devotions are handled and treated. Those four things impact the school holistically, and they are, as you might guess, interrelated as well. All right, okay, so we're going to be talking specifically about the music program and how to get students enthused, is maybe a word, inspired, to enjoy looking forward to this. This has been one of my biggest struggles in my later years. So I come in and it's music time, and I have two sets of students, one who just, yes, it's music time, and we're ready for it, and we like it, and we look forward, and oh my goodness, I forgot again. Oh man, what am I going to do? Okay, let's think. We can do that. And then the other, Oh, it's music. The other, that's what some of the others were doing. All right, and that's always just like, oh yes, here we go again. I got to work through this. So how do we get people to be inspired to sing? Now, I have, my first key is this. The relationship you have with your student outside the school and outside anything to do with music is key in inspiring them to sing. Now, that's probably true of everything, like math, English, the wonder of God's creation, those and beautiful scientific things, and what I do not consider grammar boring at all, and I've just gotten to that wonder of God's gift to humanity that's in language just inspires me in a powerful way. So where was I going with that? The relationships are critical to all of that, but singing is bigger yet, I think. Somehow, opening your mouth and making sounds and then having people critique those sounds and working together with that brings a sense of vulnerability that very few other things do, at least for me, and I think a lot of times for my students. It just takes, there is a trust that goes with that, that you have to connect with them outside of that sphere. And they learn to trust you with that, and you come into it. Now, as you go into the very first day of your school, and especially for those of you who have not taught before, this is the first time you've done it. And by the way, I will never forget my first day of school. But, and Edwin was there. So, it's so interesting to me. You don't have that. You don't have that relationship really in place. Now, what I have found is that children are pretty trusting and they're pretty willing to give of themselves and to cooperate unless they've had a bad experience or a bad home or something like that. They're typically willing to try. And so what you do is you build on that and you try to build a good relationship. I could talk a long time about that. I don't want to beat that to death. I just want to say, cultivate a relationship outside of music in order to inspire them that this is important. This is important to me. We think it's important to God, to the church, to your parents, all of that, and they will trust you and try to work with you on that. All right? Does that make sense? Does anybody have a question about that I should add or subtract from it?
When you think about it, you connect with people from in your past because you sang with them. You know, well, I used to sing with them, or we had this singing group, or the students at Bible school. I'm enjoying this term, from last Bible school where I led a course. I mean, it's kind of like that bond is there just because we sang together.
Relationship and singing are intricately related, and music is a mysterious thing that permeates other ways of life that we cannot just completely control or even categorize, all right? But we know it's there. We know it's part of us, all right? So cultivate, know your students, love your students, find out their interests. I don't need to give this to you. When you love someone, you will figure it out. You will come. You won't do it the same as everybody else. You will not make the gesture, necessarily the same way. There are many ways to show love, and we can't do all of them to all people. But your students will catch on. You're interested in them. You love to connect with them. And I try to make a point of this. I think I about always have. And it hasn't always necessarily worked or flowed or whatever, but I like to try to connect with my students on Sunday. When we just see them in passing, they come and they go, and I say hi a little bit, talk about something other than school, all right? And I can't say I'm doing that just to manipulate them. I'm actually interested in them. I'm interested in what I really am as people. I love to see... I think in John it says, I love to see my children prosper in one of the epistles or something to that effect. Anyway, I love to see those good things. All right, so cultivate relationship. All right, the second step I have is cultivate an appreciation for the beauty and power of music in your own life. Now, this is where I say, be enthused, and your students will get enthused. Now, that is kind of a rule of thumb, all right? It can be a manipulative rule. Be enthused about anything, you know, and they'll get it, all right? So be genuine with it. This is something, we're not just, okay, the church wants them to sing, so we gotta get this thing, so I gotta act like I'm enthused, all right? And if I act like I'm enthused, they'll get it, right? I'm really trying to inspire something deeper than that in you. Cultivate an awareness and a love in your own personal life for the beauty and power of music. And I want to say something about that. Different people have different things that they like, that come to them. And this is true of little children all the way up to adults. Well, our brains are wired a little bit differently for what to expect, what we like, what gets our attention. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. So I'm not talking about being too wild. I do feel like a little bit of tolerance, like someone else likes a song. Well, spend a little time, why would they like that song? And thinking about that. This again varies in which church you're in, so I'm not wanting to be any kind of bad influence on relationship to your church. So I'll just say it, but then take it with a grain of salt. I cultivated a love for the Messiah, for Handel's Messiah. And those scripture verses that are in there, and as you think about Christ's coming and his death and resurrection, and I think every time I listen to it, it just becomes more and more profound to me. All right, then I find it all over. I find music all over that is just hugely impactful, and it's become really a part of my life, and it's so big that I actually have a difficult time getting a hold of it and explaining it and handing it on to somebody. And then, so there's the old stuff, you know, the that's been way back there, and the hymns, and these are all you engage with those words. Think about the words that you're singing on Sunday when in church. Think about them, and you will find yourself thinking about the words that you sing in devotions at your school. Like, it just become real. So engage with the music yourself. Appreciate the music that you hear. Appreciate learning new songs that are coming, and appreciate the old ones. It just makes us realize how incredibly rich we are. Like there are so many things out there, and there's still more, all right? So it's overwhelmingly beautiful and empowering to me. Now, as you start noticing the beauty of the songs that you sing in devotions, some of that's going to rub off, all right? Now, one of the things I do enjoy doing is taking our songbooks. Now, I've sung with different songbooks and for in school. And the ones that we have in Bay Tree are those praises we sing that CLE sells, you know, the little orange ones or whatever. They've endured for quite a while. I don't know every song in there. I sure know a lot more than I did when I started. And so my students have just kind of grown, like maybe someone said a number wrong, or we just open it up at random. And I never do this in the first song, but maybe the second one, it's like, oh, here's a song we don't know. Well, let's try it. Let's just try it. Boy, there are some real flat tires that come out of that whole thing. but they sometimes go well. Now, I'm helped by the fact I had a couple students who actually got really good at this, all right? A little bit of a personal journey with me. I had some deep ear trouble when I was young, and then I learned to work and work and work, and I worked terribly hard at fixing it. And then now that I'm older, it's coming back again. I'm actually don't hear as well as I used to, and it's troubles me. All right, so it's very helpful for me to have some students that I actually rely on their ear, and I just try to be humble about it. You're actually better at this than I am, but you know, I keep the rhythm together, and I'm still in charge. I lead it and do all that, but I'm one of the one's contributing to the flat tire thing. But through all of that, sometimes it comes together and we sing, we get these notes down, and then we sing the words, and then I say, we are richer than we were 20 minutes ago. We know a new song. Yeah, okay, this is one of Mr. Overholt's. I was Brother Overholt for many years, now I'm Mr. Overholt. This is one of Mr. Overholt's little idiosyncrasies. You know, but I really do mean it. There's a wealth there, and it's something so beautiful to learn a new song and to do it there. So cultivate an appreciation for that yourself. And then my key number three is bring that cultivation into the classroom. And the most important time for this is not music class, but devotions, right? I often have said I don't think we're normal. I don't think we're unnormal. I think we have pretty much, this is the standard, that we start our day off with a devotional, right? And the first thing in the devotional, at least if you have roll call first, that's one thing, but is more or less singing. Now, is that your experience? Is that what you do? Yeah. I certainly recommend it. We do it at church, actually, for a reason, I think. And those deep traditions have developed and have stayed for a reason. And it's not that they can never be tweaked, but that reason for that will come clear when we do it. So I think singing is a wonderful thing to do. And at the same time, it's difficult. At least I find it somewhat difficult. Now, coming from Bay Tree, I think, most of you know where Bay Tree is? All right. It's north. It's about the same longitude as Spokane. That far west, it's right across the border from Dawson Creek. In British Columbia, so we're about 1,000 kilometers north of the U.S.-Canada border. Guess what happens in the wintertime? Two things. It gets
cold
and it gets
dark.
Snow is not what I'm after.
Dark.
Sunrise at 10, sunset at 3 type thing. There's more light than that. One thing about the poles, the twilight feeds through. So it's coming through, but on the shorter days, it's that twilight is just coming and school starts. And that has a little bit of a deadening effect as students wobble down. And I took some pictures different times, you know, it was snowing and it's just dark and it's 9:15. And so, That we're all used to it. It's not like it's that kind of event, but it does kind of, you know, okay, this is not the time that we just love to burst into cheerful song and glorious harmony together. All right, but do you know what? You just do it. So you greet them cheerfully as they come through the door, irrespective of your own personal emotions, okay? You smile at them and do this kind of thing, and then it's time to start the day. We are going to have a wonderful day. All right, so we open up our books and we sing. And you know what? It doesn't, if you do it forcefully, it doesn't take too long for the cobwebs to clear and the voices to get out of scratchy mode and into this. And it can be copious amounts of breath and sometimes not all that good. And raspy stuff all coming together here, and then it cleans up, and it starts coming. All right, I think devotions is really the most important part of the day, and we are not superhuman, but we do our best to be cheerful, to engage, to have a cheerful lesson. I love it when my students don't want to quit singing, when they're like, we got going here, and I know that the Bible, and actually I quit having Bible memory as a devotional, I just worked it into the schedule. That was for different reasons. If you have Bible memory as part of your devotional, don't feel pushed with that. That's important, that's good, that's very appropriate. But I love it when they want to just keep singing, and yet, you know, we have this thing we're trying to read through the book of Acts, and I just love reading scripture with them, and then especially the Gospels and Acts, and and talking about these stories and what's happened, and kind of, you know, as you probably know, I love history, geography, and then there's the Bible lesson yet, and it's just so rich. I just find myself getting terribly enthused, actually authentically enthused. Okay, so I'm not just making myself do it anymore. It's coming. Now the weariness is going to hit before the end of the day with me, but right now I'm feeling alive and happy and strong, and these songs are just such an important part. So for me, teaching good singing techniques, and you heard some of them in my thing where you stand up straight, imagine the string, open tall, watch your vowels, watch your consonants, watch your rhythm, sing the notes, and we have a little bit of a standing formation that we would go into. I know we have offices at my school there, and others of you would have desks. So where we had desks in Seymour, we would normally just stand beside the desk. But often I will group them in parts because we have a leader or leaders, and we have followers, and it just helps for them to, they're learning this. And doing it often, repeatedly, with many failures, you just keep thumping along. I find that creates, enforces whatever, a culture of singing that becomes normal. And it's a little bit strange when you think of inspiration, you don't think of normality usually. You think of something a little bit beyond what's normal. Yeah, we're really happy here. But a good normal is really the basis for inspirational singing, I find. This is what we do. And then sometimes it gets really good and everybody's happy, right? You just can't be there all the time, right? It's actually good for us that it's not there all the time, because, well, if it would be, it would just be normal. So maybe it is there all the time, and then we just go a little bit beyond that. Okay. I'm just playing with it. So, how do we do that in our singing? One of the things I say, I just would say for this, as far as inspiring to sing, is sing a variety of songs. All right? Especially if you have older children and younger children together. Try to get songs that captivate their interest. And it is good maybe to divide up sometimes, or maybe we were kind of talking about that, where you can sing age-appropriate songs that challenges them. I had a cousin who's very deep, or actually a nephew, who's very deeply into music. He's teaching in Antrim Mennonite School now, so maybe you know about him, Nelson Brubaker. And he was studying this stuff, and he's an intellectual, and he's saying, oh, these neurologists have discovered that music is really an important part of brain formation, actually. And there's a reason that youngsters like these little simple repetitive tunes, twinkle, twinkle, little star, you know, and then they get boring. Why? Because it's time to get some other synapses together, all right? And so the brain wants two things. It wants predictability, and then within the predictability, it wants creativity, all right? So it's seeking for something a little bit different based on what we already know, all right? And if you think about it, well, that's been your life journey. You don't want anything completely different. Like, that's just, you can't understand it, there's nothing there, you can't relate with it, right? But you don't want everything to be exactly the same either, like nothing, you know, complete uniformity of life. You need predictability with creativity, and music is very instrumental in doing that. So you have to kind of pick these songs that are both predictable to an extent and at the same time creative. All right. Now, do you have anything to say about that? I can wax a little bit more eloquent, but do you have anything to add to that, or a question? Maybe I'm going in a direction you weren't expecting.
Well, I'm having some struggle overlaying that on, like, Baby Shark. Why did that...
Say this again?
I'm having trouble overlaying that on Baby Sharks. Why did that work? Why
is it still working?
Why is it still working?
I'm not even understanding the question. What is Baby Sharks coming in?
You said twinkle, twinkle, little star after a while gets old, but so far Baby Shark has not outdated itself.
You know, this is my ignorance. I don't know what Baby Shark is.
You aren't missing much.
I just wish I would have written it, because it was super simple, and I think the person made a lot of money that day.
Okay.
It is so stinking predictable. It violates everything that you just said, but it still is with us today.
Yes.
Breathing.
Well, so is Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star.
You would recognize the tune if you heard it.
Okay, all right.
Go ahead.
It's a very...
Yeah,
baby shark, do 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 do. Baby shark, do do, and it's his motions too.
Okay. Okay. What I'm going to say is this: that you're actually, to me, illustrating what I said. That is going to keep captivating people's attention, but they're not going to sit with just that. Like they're going. There's also extremely complicated music being written that's very different and engaging. Isn't that right? That people are also captivated as well by that. I'm just talking about normally in school, there will be a place for simple, predictable songs, and then you want to stretch it a little bit beyond that. They're going to want a little bit of creativity to be engaged, to be inspired. And as I get older, maybe I get back to where I'm actually more predictable. Like it's my second childhood coming again already. Because there are songs that I just love, and I could sing them over and over again, but I do know that my students would get weary of that. So maybe they wouldn't with Baby Shark.
To reframe the perspective that you were trying to share from your nephew, I didn't follow.
Okay, so all that was is that you begin with predictability, and then you add to it. You will eventually struggle within the world of predictability. You will eventually get bored. The human brain gets bored. Now again, with your Baby Shark thing, maybe that's an anomaly or a thing against that. I'm not actually giving that as a scientific rule. I'm giving it more as, in order to inspire to sing, we need to be a little bit creative. All right, we need to be exploring a little bit, finding some new songs, and at the same time not forgetting some of the ones that we do, and being in touch with your students, what they enjoy doing. And I'm not talking about inappropriate stuff. I'm talking about good stuff, right? Last year in school, we had a very good class, and I was just so impressed with the fact that they really, really grabbed a number of songs. So one of the ones that's really going around our circles right now is an African one, and what is the last phrase is Jesus will never say no. Yeah, there you go.
Come bring your burdens.
You know what? Our first graders just loved that song. Oh, they loved it, and the joy with which they sang that was just inspirational to me. It was the whole school, right? Just yesterday we sang, and when the battle's over, we shall wear a crown. I purposefully made it a little bit different just so it's not completely predictable and whatever else. We touched it a little bit, but you could just see the light come on in those little guys' eyes when we get for that, and when the battle's over. First grade rasp in there that was extremely authentic. So they just galloped and they just would give it their best shot, and it was like a flood of joy in my heart. And of course I have some very accomplished musicians in there too, but they were happy as well. We had a wonderful time singing that, so I would say they were inspired. I think their parents were too. At the end of the year, we don't actually have a program, but we did sing some songs that we work on in school, and we actually have a song service, a Sunday morning song service dedicated once a month, where the school students will often get up and sing during that time, and it's really a blessing. Okay, so pick some songs for younger children. I do like motion songs. I had some children with, I could say, maybe behavioral disabilities or some things like that. They didn't know how to control themselves, and I got tired, you know. I just hate it when adolescent boys completely go nuts when it comes to either don't want to do anything at all or go completely wild with the, you know, how do you handle that? It's not really, again, it's not quite as simple as volleyball. All right, where you, because you, nothing squashes the spirit like the teacher just getting mad. you wanna rob all the joy out of the song, just lose your temper, or even struggle to lose your temper. Like as soon as you feel that kind of that anger welling up within you, you can feel that there's a spirit in here that's just kind of dampening this whole thing. So I don't know an easy way to tell us how to get rid of that. Maybe you're thinking something there, Brother John.
I'm not on task, I'm sorry.
All right. So I do remember the first year I taught school that we had a gathering of teachers that came from for the day, and Dan was there, Dan Weaver, and Nolan, and a couple others. Who is that teacher down in Hopewell? Come on, why can't I say Mark Roth? There we go. You remember him? Is he still around?
Yeah.
Okay, so he was there, but he gave a devotional, and he gave that idea that, you know, the spirit that is in you, you bring it into the classroom. And if there is a spirit of anger in you, it can have a spiritual influence, even if you're controlling it, right? Or trying to control it. Well, I think two things about that. It's better to control it than it is to not control it. But it's something that you want to pray for, that Lord, help me just to be cleansed of this thing and keep the joy. At the same time, I don't know exactly where that fine line is between maintaining order, like with youngsters that are goofing off, and maintaining joy, the spontaneity. I don't know if there is an exact line, but I do know we need to find that line. And it's best when it's just going well and everything's good and it feels good and people aren't acting up. But I have gotten worn out trying to walk that line, I guess, you know, in program practice, program rehearsal. Those guys have no idea how badly I dread that stuff. Okay, so, all right, even field trips can be a little bit interesting for that matter. Sing a variety of songs. Find songs that your students like and listen for their comments, their offhand comments to each other and something like that, and cultivate them if you can. If they don't like something, don't just give up right away. That's my idea. But maybe you do need to work on it to explain why you think it's good, why you enjoy it. And then, again, I do kind of lean, in school, I kind of lean towards songs that are interactive and enjoyable, that they, you can tell they enjoy it, and that shifts over time. So in my last semester, we sang Moses Hogan's Hear My Prayer, and you know that song? Oh Lord, please hear. Boy, they just loved it. Even the younger ones, that this is a contemplative, flowing song, and actually, I was triggered by this a little bit, because when my son Raphael was very young, he would listen to that on the stereo, and then we'd get, when my journey's done. Oh, he just loved that. Oh, he would just kind of do it himself, you know, that hold that done out. And so, yeah, they loved it. And I love seeing youngsters just loving to sing, all right? Anything else so far?
Church where a lot of the students were from didn't really see the value of music.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the teacher's responsibility in a situation like that?
Okay, well, the responsibility is you need to teach school, you need to get through the school year, you need to somehow do it with joy and happiness. So what you do want to watch is that you're not just kicking the church, all right? Like, you're not criticizing it. But my experience has been that if you're just joyful and spontaneous and happy and not critical, that the door is often wide open. Like the speaker said this morning, nobody ever talks, you're just so cooperative, we're just really weary of it. Like, give us an excuse to scold you, all right? So cooperate on all levels. as much as possible, obviously. Now, with that in mind, when you yourself like to sing, and the church, which would mean the families, do not that much. Like, it's just not, it actually might be more important than what we think sometimes, but it's not where you think it should be or doesn't feel good or whatever. If you can just sing simpler songs and enjoy doing them and get them interested in it at school, a little revolution is taking place that will eventually bleed back into their homes. If not the homes that the children are part of the homes that the children aren't. I will say this. This is one of my stuck record things. Your children get older. Your children grow up. I've taught 26 years now, and I'm amazed at my students. Right? I really am. They grow up. It's terribly hard for a first grade teacher to realize that this person is going to be the head or the mother of a home. And are they going to sing or aren't they in that home? That's really, it really is, goes back to their own home, but if their own home didn't, it's on the school. And it will, don't just, I would say it's very important not to get too frustrated. So don't like, I want singers in my school and I just don't have them and it just upsets me, all right? It is beautiful when you have it, but you cannot change those things quickly. I don't know if that helps you that much or not, but you can make happiness in song at school, even if the parents and family don't. You
absolutely agree with what you're saying. You've been saying using the word culture.
Yeah.
The question is culturally based or couched, and culture has changed it with over time.
Yes.
It's a big, heavy shift.
Yeah.
And some people work about a lifetime to change culture. Mm-hmm. And then they only realize that after they've gone, what they've really done.
Yeah.
Maybe this is more of a decade type of.
Or even a generation.
There you go.
It's a long time. But what I would say, I say over and over again, find interesting things that you enjoy about school, you enjoy about your children, sing with them, and that boat will start turning.
And a really good music teacher can actually change the culture of a church. It happened in our situation.
Yeah, it's happened over and over.
20 years worth of people have a passion for music.
Yeah, they just sing naturally. It's what comes. Yeah. It becomes part of them. And you cannot really manipulate it. You just do it. And it catches on, actually. People find out that this is important. I do say that the home is extremely powerful in this, and parents that sing with their children, whatever, that really comes back in. But it goes the other way too. So teach it to your children. But you definitely, even most of us where we have a church or a school that has a culture of singing, we will have families that don't in there. All right, so that we work with that. Anybody else? And if you have something else to add to it, I'm glad for it. Okay. The last key that I have is work on music techniques that help a child feel confident to sing. And that's a whole other subject. We've been talking about attitude, right? But technique leads to aptitude, and aptitude does influence attitude. When you feel confident that, yes, we can do this, we'll work through it, we'll figure it out, that helps you actually enjoy what you're doing, right? And so those are tools. Develop tools, and you want to do it as an enjoyable of a way. I try to teach rhythm with clapping. I've told lots of people this, so like the thigh, snap, clap, snap. I've done that so over and over. I even did it here at WFTI one time, so I thought maybe it's just old and boring, but then a bunch of people didn't know it. So any 4-4 song can be done with that. Now, some students can't snap. You can do two things. You can just tell them to make a motion. That's all it's for, is to count, or go ch or something like that sometimes when you're coming. So ch, so ch, ch, ch. And that, you know, it gets the rhythm going. That's one way of pulling rhythm together. Some students are definitely rhythmically challenged, even as I was with pitch. Work at blowing the pitch, humming sounds, work at thinking the sound and then going to a different note and humming that note and that kind of thing, these kinds of challenges. And this starts giving students the confidence, yes, we can blow the pitch and start our song without humming. All right, we can think it and we're right on as we go. Don't do that at your program. You know, this is what we're going to do. Do it lots of times before. The confidence really builds. Like, it's really amazing. You can think a pitch and sing it. All right? So it is possible. And the more you feel the vibrations, the more your ear tells you that, yes, there it is. That's the right one. Okay? And having had lots of ear trouble, I'm like the student, the teacher who had dyslexia that teaches people how to read. It is possible to get there, but it takes honesty and love and some joy and work with it. So we didn't get to talk about droners and that kind of thing. You may go if you like, but I will say this yet about droners. One of the biggest frustrations that teachers have with droners is they make a sound and then they expect the droner to come to them. All right, well, guess what? The droner doesn't go to them. So make a sound, have them imitate it, they're somewhere else, you go to them. Now, get them to feel the sound. And then just tiny variations from that sound where they are. Practically nobody is tone deaf. Even people who are deaf have learned to sing. All right, actually deaf. They do it through feeling the vibrations. All right, so, but it does take commitment and attitude, like, a bad attitude and a drone, they go very well together, all right? Or whatever. So a good song for that is Sweetly, Lord, Have We Heard Thee Calling. Have you ever used that for learning parts? Anybody know the alto on it? Yeah? My students just hate the alto on that song. It's two notes, do and T. They're just a half step apart. They're perfect for learning to teach parts, to learn to sing a straight line while the melody is doing something else. Because often droners don't just go straight, they do around. So learn to sing straight. It's counterproductive, but get a straight line in your head, and after that you start building off that straight line. And I can testify that droners learn to sing lead songs in church and actually do all that stuff. It's a very beautiful thing. So go with God. Build the kingdom in your song, in your classrooms, through the songs you sing.